Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God.
Hello and welcome to Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is August the 1st. Make sure you don't forget that change in the month. I can mess that up all the time. And hey, if it's not, then you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show, and you should not be trying to call in. I am the Wombat! And as usual, we have Doubter 5 and friends Hello. On the show. Doubter 5, hey. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Well. I'm wonderful. Anyway, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk show. It's about atheism, it's about free thought, it's about rational thought, it's about humanism, and the sciences. All of those things in one lovely package. Conversely, we'll also be talking about religion, religious faith, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're not alone. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rational groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how to get in contact with them after the mid-show break. Also, hey, did you know there's been a atheist call-in television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville? And it's been, I don't know, for like 7 years now? Did you know that, Doubter 5?
Yeah, I saw it. You know, I don't think that the concept of turtles doing karate and carrying swords around is a very viable concept.
Karate.
But I've seen it.
Turtles?
You know, it's not that great.
No.
Is that not it?
No, that's not it. In fact, if you were listening to the show, it will be broadcasting right now. The Atheist Call-In TV shows broadcasted by our own friends here in Knoxville. And if you ever want to catch up on any of those episodes, there's a fan of the show that's putting up those shows on YouTube. There's a whole record of them. And all you got to do is search for Free Thought Knoxville in order to see those episodes yourself. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are lots of atheist songs out there. And you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program right now. I got Quiet Company coming up. This is going to be a great show. Today's topic is how to deal with presuppositionalists. That's a big word, but we got one of the biggest brains to talk to us about it. And his name is Raul, and he's a good friend of mine. Raul?
Hey, Raul.
How are you?
Welcome.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. Glad to be on. Looking forward to talking with you guys.
Cool. Raul, first, before we begin, I think it's absolutely imperative that you have a radio name. Please tell me what your radio name is in the next 5 seconds. What is it?
Let's see.
Three, two, no
Carl Pagan.
Carl what?
Carl Pagan.
Carl Pagan? Okay.
I like that.
Okay.
Call so you Pagan Carl... for short.
Roe / Carl Pagan. So you're a street epistemologist or a street epistemology enthusiast. How do you phrase it, and what does that mean to you?
Yep. So street epistemology, as I understand it, is a dialectical method, in other words, a question and answer method of dialogue between two people where they talk about the roots of somebody's beliefs. In other words, how did you get there? Like, show me your math. Show me how you arrived at your conclusion and the method you use to get there. And then together we work with, okay, how do we know that this method, whatever it is actually reliable?
So are you saying right. then it's like a conversational technique that two people can use to see if they have a good reason to believe what they believe?
In short, yeah, that's a great way.
We're an easygoing show. I know there's people on the roads listening to this. We want to make sure we just like let everybody know what we're all about. So why do you like street epistemology? How'd you get into it?
I got into it just because I've always been interested in knowing what's true. Like even when I was a Christian, I'm no longer a Christian, but when I was a Christian, always interested in truth. And even as an atheist, I maintain that value of I love truth, and I'm always willing and open to engage people who disagree with me. And I feel like this method really does away with a lot of the barriers that exist and two people understanding each other and getting across the line.
That's a brilliant way of saying it. What do you mean by that? As far as taking or getting around barriers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found it to be really helpful, and I regularly hit the streets to do on the street interviews with strangers. A lot of people are willing to talk about what they believe in and why they believe in it. And we have a great time.
Hmm. Would you say it's like an argument or like a debate? How's that actually work?
No, I wouldn't call it an argument. I wouldn't call it debate. I would just call it a chat, I guess, to kind of steal a term from your YouTube channel. Let's chat. Check it out, everybody.
You owe me 5 cents.
So, but yeah, it's a chat.
But for the most part, Raul, about your setup, so there are a lot of different ways that I've seen people do street epistemology. I've seen people use like a table where they have like two cameras and a setup there. I've seen people like maybe have a stationary camera and record two people at once. How do you go about it? And where do you find like the best places to have these kinds of chats that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. So I use a method similar to what another popular street epistemologist uses, Anthony Magnabosco. Some of your listeners might be familiar with him. He's kind of like the main guy, but he hits the streets with a chest camera, which is the same kind of setup that I use. So I got a GoPro strapped to my chest. I hit the streets, and the downside to that is you can't see my face, but you can see the reactions of the person I'm talking with. Other setups allow you to see both faces if somebody has like a table set up like you do, for instance.
Right. I also like the ability, well, sometimes I wouldn't say it's a good thing to see my face. Sometimes I just feel like a little too scraggly for that to be on camera. What do you think is the appeal behind like setting up a camera on yourself and starting a conversation with people? Is there any kind of apprehension? Because with my setup, I have like a table and only the people who are, I guess, willing or curious about the setup sit down and have a conversation with me. But I feel like you're actually engaging people in a more freer format. And I guess what kind of challenges come up with that?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably pros and cons of both, definitely. Like the table setup is more maybe inviting, less aggressive, people come to you type of thing. Mm. Whereas with a chest camera setup, you're kind of like walking around, actively seeking people out. So you might be able to have more opportunities. But at the same time, people might be a little bit more apprehensive.
Do you feel like you ever get like really shy people that don't want to have a conversation? Oh, I guess. What are you doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I just try to gauge the situation. I mean, some people, and you know, after 5 minutes, they are done. You know.
So after about 5 minutes, do you have a timer for yourself? You said.
But some people do use a timer, and there's definitely benefits to that. I don't. I think I started using one when I first started going out, but I just kind of like just try to gauge the conversation, how comfortable the person is. You just kind of get a sense of when somebody's done with the conversation. Okay. Try to pay attention for that.
And what would you say is some crucial things to about the practice that you're doing? Like, how much do you value listening, etc.? Like, what are some core concepts if for anyone who's also interested about starting these kinds of conversation with people? What are your tips?
Yep. So you always start with understanding a person. And then you go into asking them beyond what they believe in. So you get the nuts and bolts of what they believe in, help them define their terms. But then the meat of the discussion is going to be mainly about how did they arrive at their conclusion? What method did they use? Did they use some kind of scientific method? Did they use perhaps faith? Did they use prayer? You know, whatever it is.
Yeah, we mostly...
Well, I was wondering... when Wombat sits down, he's willing to talk about anything, and the sign says that, you know, we'll talk about anything. Do you have a precept going into it that if a person sits down, they have to have a kind of a topic in mind that, I don't know, coincides with what you want to talk about? How do you approach that? Are you open to anything?
Yep, I make it clear to the person I'm talking with. Basically, what I'll say when I approach somebody is I'll be like, I only have basically like kind of two criteria with what we talk about. And that is number one, it's something you're fairly confident of. Number two, something that is kind of fundamental to your understanding of the world. So those are like my two criteria, and I just let the person choose from there.
Okay, so they can't talk about like cheerleading or something like that.
Nothing wrong with that. I love cheerleading.
No, I mean, it starts off with a fundamental understanding of the universe, so they have to get kind of deep going out the gate.
Yeah, I prefer those. I prefer conversations about topics that if this person didn't have this belief any longer, it would kind of pull the rug out from under them. Those are the conversations that I'm kind of interested in having. But you get the broader range. You can really talk about anything.
Yeah, well, cool.
Yeah, I've noticed that Raul has a style that's really, really, how do I put it? Aggressively curious. Like, he really wants to know, like, engaging, to a sincere level, what this person thinks, particularly on special topics. And I've seen most of his talks are about religion. Could you tell me about some of the other non-religious talks that you had with street epistemology? Like, what was some of the fun talks that you had that were just like really out there?
So the interesting thing about that is that I just moved. I'm living in the Northeast right now, but I was living in the Bible Belt initially when I first started going out and filming the interviews I was having with people. And I think geography has a lot to do with the kind of conversations you get, because I was getting a lot of God beliefs, a lot of Christian beliefs. And once in a while, I would get like a stray belief like karma or aliens or ghosts. But I think geography has a lot to do with the kind of stuff you encounter.
Mm.
So they mainly want to talk about food up there. Is that it?
Like, for instance, there's just one other popular street epistemologist, Cordial Curiosity.
Yes.
He's in California, I believe. And like, you notice a trend with the kind of beliefs that I guess tend to be popular in California. There tends to be a lot of, I don't know, Eastern/mystic. I'm not really sure how to describe it. But
yeah, I understand.
You're talking to a Californian right now. I kind of understand what you're talking about.
We describe it as woo, I think.
it's its own variety of woo. How do I say it? Are you saying, or the way how I see it is, street epistemology is a really good way to talk to people about supernatural beliefs that they have. You had mentioned things like karma or like reincarnation, even spirituality. These are things that we don't really have good ways to test. And my position on things when I don't have like a really good tangible grasp on whether or not I can test it, I'm fine with saying I don't know, or I'll just withhold belief until I have better evidence to believe it. And if I told people that straight out at the beginning of the talk, it might shut down the conversation. But if I take this street epistemology approach, it's not just a good way for me to express my point of view, but it's also a really good way for me to learn about how they came to their conclusions. And if they find out something really cool about how they reached their conclusions, maybe in a way that actually is testable or has a really good reason behind it, I want to learn from that. But it's just a really good way to maintain that kind of conversation. What do you think?
Yeah, I like that attitude of I want to learn from that. And that's important, like, important attitude to keep when you're talking with people.
Yeah, it's important to keep the conversation two-way. You don't want to come across as being preachy, right, or even preaching. You want to admit to being able to learn something in a conversation. That's the whole purpose of a conversation.
Right. So we are not here to talk about having nice conversations. We're here to talk about conversing with presuppositionalists. And I think you have one coming up pretty soon. So what do you mean by a presuppositionalist? And then who are we talking to? And then tell me how your initial thoughts are, and then we can get more into it in the second half of the show. So what is a presuppositionalist, basically?
So a presuppositionalist is somebody who uses presuppositional apologetics.
Whoa, but that's a big word.
So basically, all it is just somebody who accepts as their foundation to knowledge, God exists. And so, in other words, you can't know anything apart from God. And so the presuppositional apologist will typically go about trying to demonstrate how you, as an atheist or whatever you believe in, any non-Christian, you have no foundation for knowledge, period. Whoa. And the only way you can build any fact claim, any knowledge claim, is if you accept the most fundamental fact claim of them all, and that is that the Christian God of the Bible exists.
Let me try to take a step back. If I had like a guitar, I got a guitar right here. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. If I had a guitar and I hand you the guitar, and let's say you couldn't play guitar, but my presupposition position my presupposition is that you can play, and the fact that you aren't playing well right now, the fact that you aren't playing, like, I don't know, the theme song to Different Strokes on the guitar, is because you choose not to play it. You're choosing not to play it. And my worldview is that people who can't play the guitar are just people who really choose not to play it. Because in my idea, I'm assuming ahead of time, the presupposition is that everyone can play guitar. And those who can't are just choosing not to play it well. Is that kind of close to it? What do you think?
But you see, Ty, what you don't understand is that you're not an ultimate authority.
Okay.
So God, he's an ultimate authority. He's able to serve the function of being a foundation to knowledge.
Yeah. Right. What kills me about presuppositionalists is they assume the answer before they get into the argument.
There you go.
You know, they, in other words, when you go into an argument, a philosophical argument with something, really the baseline is, you know, I know that I exist because I think. Je pense, je suis, whatever. Ooh, you know, that kind of thing. And everything after that is up for grabs, and you can argue about it, you can think about it, you can give and take, you can arrive at conclusions. But a presuppositionalist comes in and says, everything below this line is not up for argument. Hmm. Everything below this line, I take as truth, and you can't question. And right. That to me is it's dishonest up front.
Not only that, but it doesn't seem like they're willing to move or budge on that
right.
position
they're
either.
Have you ever seen Matt Dillahunty do a debate with a presuppositionalist?
Yeah. In fact, he did what was the name of that presuppositionalist, Raul?
Oh, I can't remember his name.
It happens to be the same one that I'll be talking with here in a few weeks, named Cy Ted Brugenkate.
Yeah, Cy, that's right. Can I give you some advice?
I'm soaking it up. Oh, don't go there.
Don't go there. I mean, it's just going to be beating your head against the wall, but
yeah. So
we're entertaining.
Yo, we're going to get into all the advice in the second half. In fact, most of the show, the second half will just be advice and maybe some role play as well. But I guess up front, who is Cy Ten Brugenkate? Could you say that name again? He sounds so Canadian. What's going on here? It doesn't sound American at all.
He's very Canadian.
He's actually not. He's actually incredibly rude. Excuse me.
All right. So Cy Ten Brugenkate.
Okay, and who is he?
He is somebody who's been doing presuppositional apologetics for I don't know how many years now, possibly like 10 years or so. But he started out as an evidentialist. So he was all about giving you facts to prove that the Christian God of the Bible exists, that he's one true God. And then he came to this realization where he realized, no, wait a minute, if I'm using facts to prove that God exists, that means facts are the ultimate authority. Human reason is the ultimate authority. And I'm robbing God of his due because I'm saying he's not the ultimate authority. So that's why he uses the approach he uses. It's his way of honoring God, of submitting to God, of saying Jesus is Lord, not just of my life. He's the Lord of my reason. He's the Lord of logic. He's the Lord of everything.
Do you think that...
Cop-out, if you ask me. It's just a simple cop-out, but go ahead.
Do you think that Cy genuinely holds these points of view?
Yeah, I have no reason to doubt his sincerity. I mean, the human, it's easy sometimes when somebody believes something crazy to be like, there's no way they could believe that, and definitely there are people who are disingenuous, but I mean, the human mind is, you know, it's wonky sometimes. It does weird things, you know.
You can't see me nodding.
I'm wondering, so you're talking with Cy. He's like this really, I wouldn't say skilled debater, because he's not really trying to have a debate. He's really just trying to preach in front of somebody. He kind of talks past points, and he has ways of avoiding the deeper subjects that his debate partner wants to talk about. But he is very well experienced at what he does. Have you heard any of his previous conversations with other, I guess, atheists or other people who don't necessarily hold his same presuppositions that he holds?
Yep, I have. And in preparation for my discussion with Cy, I'm you know, revisiting a lot of his material, really watching a lot of his stuff to just get to swim in those waters and just get more comfortable being there and all that. But yeah, I mean, he like I said earlier, the main tactic of the the presuppositionalist is to demonstrate somehow that what you think you know, you actually, apart from God, you have no foundation for knowing it. Mm-hmm. And so the way to do that is for them to ask questions like, you know, is it possible for you to be wrong about everything you know? How do you know you're not in the matrix? Oh, you, okay. You know what I mean?
So I guess our listeners would be asking then right now, like, what's the big deal? Why can't you just answer those questions and have a good conversation with Sai?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the question that they're trying to answer is legitimate. Like, it's legitimate to ask, what are our foundations for knowledge? And the fact is, like, there are some things we know, there are some things we don't know as far as our foundations. There are some things that we just accept as our foundation. And that's the kind of thing that is kind of exploited by somebody like Sai. He'll exploit the fact that you can't account for why you, for instance, trust the laws of logic. Like, for all you know, they're going to change tomorrow.
Yeah, but he just makes claims, just like most Christians do, most religions do. They simply make claims and expect you to buy into them. They say, make a claim that God, well, they don't even go there. They don't say God exists first. They say God is the ultimate, you know, authority in the universe, and you have to buy into it. But they bypass the entire step where they have to prove that God actually exists. Mm. And it's dishonest.
I think that's the truer point that I'd be inquiring about, because Doubtify has a point. You're in there trying to have a conversation with someone, generally trying to understand something in a curious and sincere way, whereas Sai is going to the conversation trying to sell a brand. He's not there trying to learn anything new, and he's not there trying to be
exactly
demonstrated that he's wrong. He's going to fight for what he believes, regardless of if it's completely shown to be irrational or not. And because he's not coming in there with the openness that you are, it's not really a conversation anymore. It's just, hey, a listen to me hour. It's the listen to me hour. And the cool thing about street epistemology is, if you have two people who are generally trying to understand something, you can get to an amazing level of understanding with just working with someone. Kind of like if you're working on a math problem together. You say, hey, this number, this set of addition, this line doesn't add up the way it should be. And the other person realizes the mistake, and you guys can correct it and both get to a more accurate answer. But if you're working with someone who's disingenuous, or someone who's so ardently stuck on just one frame of thought, you can't really get that kind of feedback, and you're stuck, and you either end up going in loops, and you can't really expect it to have like a fundamentally productive conversation with that person. So I guess, what is your goal with talking with Sai?
I would say my goal is to try to apply the same questions that he uses with people to his own belief. And that is difficult, because I feel like Sai and people who use street or presuppositional apologetics, one of their main tactic is to avoid, you mentioned earlier, avoiding subjects. Yeah, it really is an evasion of any and all questions that might be aimed and targeted at their right. foundations.
Right, and I can't see that it will be productive at all. I mean, you might as well walk up to a street preacher on the corner and try it out, shout him. It's not a conversation. He's just going to be making the same claims and the same points over and over again. It doesn't matter what you say.
Right.
To me, you're giving him credibility. You have reason to you bring to the argument, and all he's doing is just saying, no, 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 what I believe is true. And right. there is no argument. There is no back and forth. There's no communication.
Go for it.
There is actually a little like rhyme and reason to like his approach. And when you understand that, it can be an interesting exercise to like question some of his foundations. Like, for instance, when he says that God exists and God is real because without God, you couldn't know anything. In other words, what he's saying is God is self-evident. When he says that's the case, I want to ask, how do we determine whether or not something is self-evident? How did you determine that he's self-evident? What's the criteria for a self-evident truth? When are we justified in accepting something as self-evident?
Yeah, thing about it is, it's not just you and him, it's the audience as well, I assume. Are you gonna have people in the room, or is it just gonna be online, or
great question.
What is it?
Yeah, because sure.
The audience is a silent participant. And if you make some really, really good points, I guess you could justify the entire exercise by saying that you're going to be able to sway some of the office, I mean, the audience members. But I guess it depends on the size of the crowd and the receptivity to see how worthy it would be. Anyway, I give you kudos for going there anyway. And it takes a lot of bravery to go up against a
traditionalist
who's not going to listen to anything you say.
It takes a lot of confidence to listen to someone who's not going to listen back. But
exactly.
I will say this. Would you mind talking about the event just before we head out? When is the date? What show it's going to be on? What kind of audience will be there? Things like that.
Yep. I don't know how set in stone it is. I'm talking back and forth with the host or the co-host of Non Sequitur podcast, and he gave me some tentative dates, and I just don't know how set in stone those are. Tentatively, sometime in the next month, I'll say. He plans on having me and Sion for a conversation.
Okay. And if anyone wants to watch that, where could they go to check that out?
Yep, the Non Sequitur podcast. I actually just subscribed to it today, since I'm going to be on there. I figured I should listen to some of their material. And it's actually really interesting. It reminds me of some of my favorite podcasts. But you can find it on any podcast platform. It's called the Non Sequitur podcast. And yeah, I would just say look out for that particular conversation. It should be coming out.
So just strictly podcasts. Check it out. That's your favorite podcast follower.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So we are actually getting close to the bottom of the hour. Like I said, we're going to play some music. We have some quiet company coming up. This song's called Set Your Monster Free, and when we come back, we'll be talking about some of the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville.
Well, daughter, I once thought that I had angels in my room. They were sleeping on my fan while I was dreaming of you. And daughter, I once had such desire to believe that our lives had been planned out by an unseen deity. But you don't have to waste your time holding on to beauty. Daughter, I once knew that everything that I believed, it was good and fair and true and consistent with my needs. But daughter, I am wrong almost as often as I'm right. So daughter, just be strong enough to make up your own mind, 'cause you don't have to waste your time holding on to beautiful lies. No, you don't have to waste your time. Thank you.
the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Welcome back, I'm Wombat. And this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Listen, we just had a great break and I love that band. If you want to know what that is Quiet Company. The song's called Set Your Monster Free. Check them out however you get music and listen to them. They're a great band. Wonderful story. And we have previous episodes on this radio show where you can hear about us go into more depth about Quiet Company particularly. Anyway, let's talk about some of the free thought groups that you can join right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society in Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 15th year. ASK now has over 800 members, and you can find us online on KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist. Don't be let down by the number of people who RVSP, known RVSPs. There's lots of people that show up. It's pretty simple. If you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to your meetup and your local free thought or atheist meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. And if you can't find one, start one. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup group. Like I said, it happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Flats and Taps.
We've changed locations.
Oh, where's the new location?
Well, for one more week only, we'll be at Black Horse Pub in Bearden. That's just off Kingston Pike in Bearden. But starting next week, week after, we will be back at Marley's Tap Room in Pizzeria.
Awesome! That's my favorite.
Yes. Yeah. That's what we've been there for several years. We tried other places. We've been gone for like a year. And now we're going to be back at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. So anytime after August 10th,
yeah,
you can join us there.
It's a great place in the city to meet up too. Place. Lots of parking.
Great food.
Lots of great food. Yeah, absolutely. Good
and
drink and
specials.
Great conversation. Yeah. So everybody's welcome, and as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, you are have a seat available to you anytime. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Another large free thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. Great people. I've done two talks with them so far, and they've been around for over 20 years. RET has a bi-weekly set of presentations and discussions at Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road, and they meet on the first and third Sundays in the Goins Admin Building / Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalists.org and click on upcoming events. And there's, of course, the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like fellowship of a church-type gathering. And they only meet once a month, and that's on the fourth Sunday. We also have the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free thought high school or college student who would like to get involved in the free thought movement, or who would just like to find other free thinkers to hang out with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Again, if you ever want to call into this show, our number is 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937.
I see a dancing phone in my mind.
And you can check out Digital Free Thought blog for even more topics. Anyway, this show, we have a good friend of ours. He is, what did you call yourself, Carter Pagan? Carl Pagan?
I love Carl Sagan, and he gave me 5 seconds to come up with something, and that's what popped in my imagination.
Cool. And he is a street epistemologist, and we've been talking about that on the show for a while, but again, he's a guy who likes to talk to people using a friendly method to get to their foundation of their belief and try to figure out if that foundation is reliable, and if it is, he wants to know about it, and that's why he's starting these conversations. He has a talk coming up with a presuppositionalist, and a presuppositionalist is someone who goes into conversations already assuming that they're right about a very specific thing and are more or less unwilling to move on that front. So what it's like the battle between an immovable wall and an unstoppable force. We got Raul on one side. He's rushing down on that presuppositionalist. We got the presuppositionalist saying, I'm not moving. I'm not changing my mind no matter what. And we're asking here on the show what will come about of it. So, Raul, I think what would be cool is to talk about, like, some advice that you might give to, like, pre-subs, talking to them, and then maybe what your goals are particularly in this conversation. Why don't we start with goals first? What exactly is your goal with talking with Cy Bergenkate, which is the guy that you'll be a pretty well-known presuppositionist that you'll be talking to on the show coming up later this month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess my goal is to apply a little bit of his critical thinking to his own view. So I think a lot of the questions that presuppositionalists ask are good. It's good for us to examine our foundations to make sure when we're building a house that we have something solid to build on top of. So a lot of his questions are good, but I feel like a lot of times applying those same questions to his own view is what's missed. And so
it's kind of like saying, if you know, how can we not see the sun at night if the earth is flat? But we have to assume the earth is flat. So something's wrong with the sun. And this is the problem that I have with presuppositionalists, because they won't change any of the position that they start with. And as far as I'm concerned, most of the premises that they start with are false, but you can't get them to move off of it.
Mm. You know, Cy does have the position where he says any worldview aside from the Christian worldview is absurd, and therefore he can only argue from the Christian worldview. His argument is, if you're not arguing from the side of Christianity, you're not making any sense, and there's no point in talking to you anyway. Therefore, let's talk about my point of view and assume that it's the only, you know, rational one. Like, how do you even get over stuff like that?
Yep. The hard part really is trying to get Cy or whoever you're talking to share some of the burden of proof, because I think it's legitimate for him to ask me to defend some of my foundations, why I assume what I assume and so forth. But the tough thing is to say, okay, let's also apply these same questions to you. And how do you do that? You know, how do you kind of turn the tables like that?
Hmm. It would be cool if you guys were working on a similar goal. Like my strat dealing with people who are really unmovable, particularly people who have like an opinion. It's not so much that, yeah, it actually is kind of like he has a very strong opinion that Christianity is true. He's not able to demonstrate that evidentially, but that means with evidence, but he does have a very deep belief about it. And that's the same thing to me as like a guy with a really strong opinion. But when I do my talks with people with strong opinions, my goal isn't so much to dive into the details of their opinions, because I can get that they hold it genuinely. I get that they love it very much. What I'm interested in is, can we work on a goal together to better understand why you came to this conclusion? And if I can talk about the methodology that you used to get to your, you know, your belief, the how questions, the why questions, etc., then maybe we could set up a criteria that you're using to really genuinely hold on to belief that you have. And if you have a criteria, which you should, if you admit that you don't have a criteria, maybe that's a more interesting point. But if you do have a criteria, then maybe we can look to see if that criteria is biased towards your conclusion already. Because if it's a biased criteria, it may not tell you as genuine information as an unbiased criteria. And if your criteria is Christianity is the best and anything else is absurd, and that's my criteria that told me that Christianity is the best, then we can obviously look at that and say, hey, this criteria seems to be obviously biased towards one religion and none of the others, or even non-religions. So, like, why are you using a biased criteria to reach this conclusion?
Yeah, that is interesting. So one thing that a presuppositionalist might say to that is that, because basically what you're saying is it seems like a flawed methodology to assume your conclusion. And one thing that a presupp might point out is that for a foundation to knowledge, it's necessarily circular. And so, for instance, they might point out the fact that, like, with logic, like, they might challenge you to show me why you trust logic. Show me why you trust and accept the reliability of logic itself without using logic, because you can't assume it's valid when you're trying to show that it's valid.
What else can we use? I mean, it's like saying your senses lie to you. I can't tell you how many times I've heard a Christian tell me, you know, that you can't trust your senses. The senses lie to you. What else are we supposed to use?
Yeah. Also, is there anything wrong with saying I don't know if you don't have a good way to figure something out? Like, my base foundational position is I'm happy with I don't know, because I don't know is actually the best answer, not just an option, but the literal best answer to have when you don't have a conclusive way to reach a conclusion. I hate to use those two words in the same sentence. But like, if you are trying to figure something out and you don't have a good way to do that, I don't know is a great place to be. That's not the end. It's just a recognition that you have limited ways to do things. And it's actually an intellectually honest position. And there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of people, we're raised in a society where we need to say, I know, we need to choose our team, we need to have our politician. It's fine to say, hey, I'm waiting for more information. This is the best that I have at the moment. It seems to be pretty reliable. I can test it. It can improve. And in the event that it's wrong, I'm willing to learn more, better ways. But here's my criteria that I'm using to get to your level. And it requires these certain things, these certain kinds of criteria. And if that's not a good basis, I'm willing to improve it. But you got to give me something that I can work with, too. What are you using, and why is it reliable, and what criteria are you using, and is that criteria biased? And if you don't like that, that's fine. I understand that you like the way that you like to think, but it seems to be the case that if I can't get to where you're at, I'm either going to say I don't know as like my final answer, or hey, I may have something pretty useful right now that seems to be pretty good with the way how I've been doing things already. And I'm fine with those two things right now because they seem to comport better with the reality that I'm experiencing.
So here's the comeback from the precept. So when you say I don't know is the best answer, so let's accept that as your claim. Your claim is I don't know sometimes is the best answer. Ty, can you be wrong about everything you know?
Can I be wrong about everything that I know? Not everything. I think there are some things that... Oh, are we role playing right now? I don't want to get too distracted on the radio show.
Okay.
I would say, there is a measure of how absolute I am about any belief. And when someone gives me an absolute claim like Tyrone, in all situations are you X, or Tyrone, in all situations are you Y, because my beliefs tend to be based on evidence, that necessarily puts me in a position where I need to be open to new evidence that might change my mind. So I'm never in a position where I'm 100% or 0% on anything. And that might sound weak to someone who like loves God 100%, and I understand that. But from my perspective, it shows that I'm being open-minded with different points of view. And I find that's more important than... I think that open-mindedness is actually more of a virtue than the consistency of saying I'm never changing my mind no matter what, regardless of what might come in the future.
One thing I appreciate about what you said is that a couple of times you said, I understand where you're coming from. I understand that you accept this. I understand that it doesn't make sense to you or whatever. Like you're expressing some empathy there. And I think that can go a long way in helping create a more like, friendly conversation.
Yeah, I also know that you'll be talking to an audience, and there's a big component with how you will appear to the audience with relation to how you're talking to Sai. And I know that's not such a big deal as far as like, you know, the nuts and bolts of the conversation, who's using the more rational arguments, but it's a factor that I think is that's considered with regard to how well you're conveying your idea to someone. And if you are, how do I put it, just as unempathetic, maybe possibly rude, or as stubborn as Sai is, not only is it not an entertaining conversation that people won't watch, but it might actually color your perspective in the same light of absurdity that Sai has. Because there might be atheists who don't even know what street epistemology is. So I think it's good to just show that you're an affable person, that you're a really nice guy, and you actually are. So that's an easy win for you to just invest in while you're conversing with Sai. I think Doug did, so we have another street epistemologist who goes by the name Pine Creek, and he just did a conversation with Sai, and he definitely came off as the more likable dude in the conversation, even though he was an atheist. So you have Sai who's like condemning non-believers left and right, whereas he's having this really genuine conversation with Doug, who's inquiring about his life, throwing out jokes, making Sai laugh. It puts atheism in a really nice context in that here's a guy who doesn't like atheism whatsoever, but yet he's having a good conversation with someone who does identify as an atheist, who is an atheist, and isn't fitting the caricature that's been set up for atheism. It's kind of cool.
I would say definitely keep that in mind. I think that's a good goal to keep in mind, and I'll definitely try to think about how I can incorporate that. I guess I should really sprinkle the whole conversation.
Like, you could definitely take a more aggressive approach if you want to, but I think if you, the easier goals would be, can you work together on a shared goal between you and Sai? Because he's not going to move on his positions, and it's going to be really hard to have a genuine conversation with him. So you could try it where you are trying to like throw the questions back at him, but I bet you he's gonna know exactly how to deal with those and then throw them out. And he might ask you some leading questions as well. We can talk about ways to handle that as well. But I think the easiest wins are, you know, put a good light for atheism, good to put light for you personally, good to put light for street epistemology, and show that, hey, listen, I'm trying to have a productive conversation with you, I'm a really nice guy, and people call me an atheist, and I recognize that I'm an atheist too, but that's not a bad thing. We're actually a lot of good people, and we're willing to have really good conversations with people, even people who won't change their mind.
I guess any exposure is better than no exposure. So go for it, good luck.
Yeah.
Let us know if we can help.
Yeah, definitely. What do you do with leading questions? Because Sai likes to ask a lot of leading questions, like, do you think you're going to go to hell? Do you want to go to hell?
He has scripts that he has scripted out the answers and everything, too.
Right. So, yes or no questions.
He's going to try to lead you down a path.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it depends on I'm kind of familiar with all those leading questions, and I might take a different approach depending on the question, but. We talked about how, like, maybe one way to defuse the situation and not get stuck in the vortex of his leading questions is to, invite him to, like, let's figure this out together. I wonder how we would answer that. What do you think? What would be a good approach?
Yeah, I think that the best way to break the script is just to answer honestly.
Right.
Because, and use your logic. Because some of those questions are really dumb questions if you've studied them and know the answers that he may not know, or he may not even have the perspective on. What do you think about sin? You know, that type of thing. And do you believe the murder is a sin? Of course, he doesn't know that sin is not real.
Or he doesn't realize that murder is factually, by definition, illegal, because it's the illegal killing of somebody.
You know, have you ever sinned? No, I've never sinned, because... sin is not real. Sin is a trespass against God, and if God's not real, then sin doesn't exist.
Larry has a very straightforward point. You guys are simple.
Some of these questions that he plans out will backfire on him with the least amount of thought.
Right. Yeah, definitely. To the honest mind, sure. But to him, no. And he's not there to engage in his own thoughts. He has a lot of outs for it. But I would say avoiding leading questions... Larry's point on answer honestly, like always, it's a great one. It also shows that you're trying to be honest too. That puts you in a good light. I would also say, as you said, change his leading questions into you asking yourself the question, and then express your thought process as you try to deal with the question. And that
you're
way you can ask yourself.
No, the politicians like, if you don't like the question, then answer the question you wish he had asked.
Oh, no, that's dishonest. I don't think that's good at all. I think, though, if he asks you something like, hey, do you think you ever sin? And don't just directly say yes or no to him, because that floats you on his script. But I would say, ask yourself, have I ever sinned? Let me see. Do I think sin's an actual thing? Well, I would have to come to terms with which God am I sinning against, and do I believe in a God? No, it doesn't seem like
I like do. That. Okay, yeah, so I like that, because it's what he's looking for is just, he wants to know what you believe, but what you're saying we should do is don't just talk about what you believe, like highlight the method of, like, the focus on the method that you're focused on. Right. I don't want to give you my answer, my better answer. I want to give you, like, this is my thinking on it. This is how I arrived here. This is the method that I'm using. Maybe it's wrong. What do you think?
Right.
Show your work.
Show your work. And even if he says, like, hey, you can't reason without God, you can still internalize that and be like, I can't reason with God. That doesn't seem like that makes sense, because I would need better evidence. That's the ability to reason just seems to be proof that I can reason, and I can't tie that into a god until I have, you know, good evidence for god beliefs. So I guess I'm wondering right now is, like, what's the evidence that you have to tie all reasoning to a god belief, aside from you just saying that you can't do it without God? Like, just the ability of expressing yourself out very clearly is what the audience will be able to key in more, because you're probably the newer person on the block. They're probably more interested in what you have to say. Like, a street epistemologist, what's that? We already know what Psy's going to say. We already heard, like, the God arguments. But, like, who's this guy who's, like, rationalizing things and really, really invested in the method? And I think if you just take your time with that, regardless of the questions that you get, you'd be able to answer them honestly, show that methodology is really important to you, and never be misled down a bad line of questioning.
Right. And one thing that a lot of people, a lot of debaters just let slide, and it drives me crazy. The atheist experience does this all the time. They'll get a caller, and they'll talk about how the universe cannot exist without God. And they assume up front that the God is their God, the Christian God. Hmm. And they never call them on it. They never say, okay, let's say that the universe can't exist without a God. Now, can you draw a line? Can you give me the reason why you think that God is your God?
Right.
And that's a huge gap that they can't fill. I've never heard anybody fill it correctly. Or, not correctly, but honestly. You know, there's no good way to fill that gap. So just be aware that they're going to do that and then call them out on it, I would think.
You call him out in a way where you're still thinking about it on your side. Because if you call him out, he's done this so many times where he's used to people calling him out and stuff. But if you're calling him out as you're thinking about it, the only way that he can interject is by interrupting you. And if he's always interrupting you, that looks better for you because you're not the guy that's interrupting him. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha.
Just like, that doesn't seem like a good reason, but I can see why you would think that. My only issue that I would have is that the blah, 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 blah. That seems to be a logical fallacy based on this.
And you can say, I'm an atheist. You know, all these religions are coming at me. You know, the Buddhists, the Islamists, the Muslims, whatever. Even Mormons are trying to tell me that their God is the right God. Why, even if I accept the fact that the universe was created by God, why should I believe that that God is your God? Right. And let them try to fill in the gap there.
Yeah, and if he says all reason can only come from God, how did he get it to his God specifically? If he says all reason, or you can only know things because of God, how does he prove that, aside from just the fact that X exists? How does X existing prove that his God exists, and specifically his God? But I think just any God at all is probably, like, the better, you know, justification. And then if he is able to demonstrate that, how did he get to his God specifically? I think that'd be really good. But I think the goals would be, you know, show you're an affable guy, show you're a good guy, and also see if you can work on a criteria. Do SE on yourself, because it may not, I'm not saying you can't do SE on him, definitely try it, but if you start the process of, when you ask me questions, I'm going to show you why the method is important. I'm not just going to tell you that the method is important. I'm going to show my line of reasoning to get to the answer that I give you. And it just, highlights you in a really good light in the process. And I'm, like I said, Larry and I, we're both willing to help you out regardless of whatever you need. Raul, we're really happy for you.
SE yourself. That's great going into it. I'll definitely keep that in mind.
Yeah. Okay, Raul, do you have any, like, closing thoughts on, like, this process?
On talking to presuppositionalists?
Yeah, presuppositionalists. What would you say is, like, some good, you know, leaving comments on the matter?
Or just general comment, because we're coming up at the end of the hour. Do you have any final words you'd like to put out to the audience?
Or, like, I guess, you want to promote your own channel, all that stuff.
Yeah, that would work.
One thing I would say is that a lot of presuppositional apologetics is coming from a Reformed theology perspective, which has a very high view of God's grace, God's sovereignty.
Okay. We have 30 seconds left. I think Raul's audio just cut out a little bit.
Did I cut up?
Yeah, but we have 30 seconds left. We would recommend that you check out Street Knowledge on YouTube.com. That's your channel, right?
Correct, Street Knowledge, yep.
And please tune back in next time for more Digital Free Thought Radio right here on Wozo Radio. And thank you for our guests for coming in. Doubter 5, got anything to say real quick?
Everybody's going to somebody else's hell.
All right. Bye, guys.
Good night. Bye.
Thank you guys so much. I never heard it put that way. Everyone's going to someone else's hell.
My tagline. Try and change our fate. Love, life, and celebrate. Letting go of God. Letting go of God. Letting go of God. Letting go of God.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.